For your safety, it's a bubble-wrapped Doctor Who episode of Amazonian-sized proportions. It's Kerblam! Coming up next on Don't Blink, from Golden Spiral Media, celebrating 10 years of podcasting.
This is your Don't Blink podcast, a fan podcast devoted to the BBC series known as Doctor Who. Sharing thoughts, theories, and listener feedback are your hosts, Wayne Henderson and Jada Wilkerson.
Welcome back to your Don't Blink Doctor Who podcast. I'm Jada Wilkerson, Whovian, comics enthusiast and storyteller.
And I'm Wayne Henderson, your voice acting Green Bay Packers fan, and I once dreamt of someday being honored as Employee of the Day. And on this edition of Don't Blink, we're going to review this week's Doctor Who episode, Kerblam, have a little bit of Who news.
And we'll share more of your great listener thoughts and theories. And to let your voice be heard, you can call us on our voicemail at 304-837-2278 or by using our voicemail widget from anywhere in the world at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. Now, let's share what we loved and maybe a couple of things we didn't about Kerblam. Now, for me, one thing I absolutely loved was the Kerblam Man. He delivered a fez with a note that said, help
Amazing.
Me. Yeah, but he delivered a fez.
And, of course, that brings back memories. It does make you wonder, did Doctor Number 13, Jodie Whittaker's doctor, order that for herself? Or did 11 order it sometime in the past and it's just now getting there?
I recall Matt Smith at some point saying something about, ooh, a fez. I can just order one of these, right? So I guess he did, and eventually he got there.
Because I know, obviously, the Kerblam Man can just magically beam himself where you are and deliver your products. But at the same time, it's kind of hard to keep track, even for a company as huge as Kerblam, for them to keep track of where the TARDIS is at any point in time and space.
Yeah, which is one of the scenes that I absolutely loved. It might have been the opening scene where they're trying to dodge at the moment unknown entity chasing them. That was a great little scene.
Yeah.
I liked it. It was small, but it was effective.
Yeah, no explanation. I guess none needed. And since the fez did come with a note saying, help me, the doctor and her best friends go to investigate the moon that's orbiting, I guess, Kondoka. Kondoka,
yeah.
Interesting place to put the Kerblam headquarters.
You know, I think I could see that. If it's a parallel to a society like ours, or a parallel to our society, then the planet's full, everything's automated. What better than having your base on the moon where you can teleport to anywhere on the planet and... It has some science fiction attraction to it, for sure.
But it's an unusual company, and I don't know if it's just these rules that were enacted for Kerblam or possibly all businesses within that area. Because apparently, after the robots really took over, they now have a 10% organic workforce law. So whether they want to or not, they have to at least hire 10% organic life forms, which I assume means humans and similar, but I guess it could be anything.
Yeah, I was under the impression that things had just gotten so advanced that humans weren't really needed and jobs were needed, but there were none for humans. And in order to make things slightly fair, they had to hire at least 10% organic.
And in addition to those laws, there was an announcement sometime during the episode where they had to have an emergency rest break in the home zone, which, you know, is a nice thing. But at the same time, the fact that it's an emergency rest break and basically they're being ordered to have mandatory rest. So I guess there's pros and cons to that, but it just struck me as kind of odd.
Oh, yes. You know, I know what you're talking about. And I think I might have headcanoned that away by thinking that they just aren't used to organic workforces anymore. Everything has become so automated that they think, oh, well, humans need rest breaks, right? Isn't that how it went when there was when everyone was working? So, emergency rest break. It kind of works. It's odd.
Let me ask you this, though, Jada. Do you think that the doctor's magic wand, I mean, sonic screwdriver, do you think it was used to solve way too many things this week? It seemed to just be able to fix almost everything.
Well, you know,
touchy question. I know.
Yeah. Cause there's a lot I didn't fix, but we'll get into that. it did seem to be doing its share of lifting this week as far as plot. but okay. To be honest, I think that might be a little bit the problem of the plot and the story itself, which I feel is a good idea. I like what they were doing, Space Amazon, and then they got into some political stuff later on, which I'm not sure about. But it just didn't really pull together for me. And it feels like the sonic screwdriver was the Band-Aids over the parts that had already been kind of soldered back together or you know, sutured back together. I don't know. Yeah, if I felt the presence of the sonic screwdriver this week, and that wasn't cool because normally it's, or at least up until this point in this particular season, it's been used rather well. It hasn't been so much of a plot device. They've been able to limit it. I don't like noticing it though.
Yeah, that's one way to put it, is you really notice it. And I'm going to give him a bit of a pass. It was used a bit much, but considering this was such an unusual episode, a very light episode in a lot of respects, and a very confusing episode in a lot of respects, as far as I don't know if things were cut out that would have explained things better or what, but I'm not the only one who's said, I'm not really sure exactly what I just watched.
Yeah, like, for instance, when we find out who is behind the help me message, it's the system, but somehow it's never really addressed that the system is sentient. man, there are quite a few holes I have with this. The system was trying to stop the guy. I'm sorry, what was his name, Charlie?
Yeah, I believe so.
But the system could have easily stopped Charlie. There's a lot in this that doesn't really hold together for me. So when I try to make sense of it, I just stumble. I don't know how you feel about it, but
along the same lines, in some ways, you know, it's not one of the pivotal episodes of the season. I don't think we're going to be referencing this episode in future episodes of Doctor Who, you know, kind of like the Christmas episode a few seasons ago, Dr. Mysterio. You know, it's just a standalone thing and somebody had a great concept. Maybe it worked. Maybe it didn't. Everybody, I'm sure, has a different opinion on that side of things. It was interesting as the episode went along, you know, we're all at home watching this episode of Doctor Who trying to figure out who sent the help me message. And until the time that we find out that it's the Kerblam system itself, I was suspecting almost every single life form that I saw.
Yeah. And I understand what they were trying to do. It was interesting. They wanted to make the corporates appear to be the baddies. And then when we found out that these guys are kind of checking out, it was kind of up in the air. I might need to watch this two or three more times and really let it soak in. But I saw it twice, and a lot of it was still lost on me.
Jada, I don't think you need to watch it more than one more time. Maybe during the off season when there's a lot, you know, free time to do that kind of thing. For me, overall, you know, like you said, interesting concept. It seemed to me a lot like Kerblam was definitely a competitor or impersonator to the Autofact product shipping company from Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams TV series that was on Amazon last December, January timeframe. In although it's based on the Philip K. Dick short story from, I believe, 1955, 1956, and they kind of translated it, made it a bit more modern. But basically, AutoFac is like Amazon in the future as well. And although in the Philip K. Dick story and in the TV series, it's really interesting. I'm not going to give away the big surprises at the end, but because the few remaining people on Earth are still so much into consumerism that even though humanity is dying off, this AutoFac company that's like Amazon still knows that the only thing it can do is supply things to people. And so it finds a way to make sure that it's always going to be needed to supply people, even in the future when there's less people, and they have a 100% robotic workforce. But it's just interesting that because Amazon has gotten so huge here on planet Earth in 2018, that it's easy to really take aspects of it, project it into the future, and see where things may go if we're not very careful.
Very true. Very true.
And so if you do have Amazon Prime Video during the off season of between Doctor Who seasons, if you want to watch Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams, at least watch the AutoFac episode. It's really, really good.
Oh, you know what? I haven't seen it, and I have to remember to do that. You know, but Yaz had a very nice moment at the end of this episode.
Yes.
Yeah, when she wanted to deliver Dan Cooper's necklace to his daughter. That was sweet. That was very sweet of her. I imagine they probably did it off camera in between or something like that.
Yeah.
I have a question, though. Dan Cooper was the gentleman that went into the dangerous area.
Yes.
And was...
Because he didn't want Yaz to have to go there on her first day, and he knew how dangerous it was. And unfortunately, it was, I believe, even more dangerous than he could have even imagined because, well, he never returns. We assume that Dan Cooper turned into goo after getting killed by the system, which was being basically coordinated by Charlie, I guess it was.
That's what I'm confused about. How was the system able to fight back against Charlie, but not stop him?
Good question. Listeners, if you happen to have a good answer to Jada's question, remember, give us a call on our voicemail at area code 304-837-2278 or our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. Heck, you can even go to the blog post for this episode, Kerblam, and leave your comment there because it is kind of fuzzy in the end. Yeah, I don't know. But if you have a great answer that we're just overlooking, let us know.
Absolutely. You know, I have one more unanswered question, and it's probably a step too far, but it felt a little bit like they were... The message of this particular episode was confusing. When I sat down and I tried to boil it down to the simplest message I could, it kind of felt like they were saying, not in general, but in this particular story, that the corporation is the good guy and the Everman who just wants things to be a little more fair is the villain. And even as I thought that, and that's my unanswered question, is that legitimate? It still doesn't feel right, but I really couldn't boil it down to a clearer message. I mean, short of, hey, don't blow things up.
That might pretty much be it. I thought about it for a second, and I think you went deeper than even I did because I'm not positive. You know, I just got the impression that everything was basically good, or at least good or bad, you know, kind of down the middle, except for Charlie, who wanted to try to break the system. And instead of using his skills for good, he wanted to make an example by having some people killed and, I guess, turned into goo. And even the girl that he liked. So it was very confusing.
See, That was confusing because the system got the girl down there and locked her in and gave her the present. So if the system could do that to her, why did it do that to him?
I don't know.
I'm going to leave it there. Leave it at that.
One of those things we may not know. So kind of a light episode. And of course, next week's looks like it's going to be really good. We'll have to wait and see to be sure. But for Kerblam, Jada, I'm going to give this episode 6.5 out of 10 dangerous deliveries of bubble wrap bombs.
Oh, man, that's, you know, that's actually kind of Moffat-like. Something so innocent and something we love is now forever corrupted.
We'll never look at bubble wrap the same way again.
Never. But, you know, I feel you. I gave this 6 out of 10 twirly delivery bots because, well, I love that little bot. It was great.
Oh, yeah. Twirly. Kind of one of the first versions of, I guess, a takeoff of an Amazon drone, I guess.
Yeah, like a universal or galactic Amazon or Kerblam.
Kerblam
drone.
Oh, very hard to keep track. All right. And speaking of the fact that now bubble wrap is going to be looked at differently, I posted the weekly Twitter poll also in our Don't Blink Facebook community group, so please join that. I pondered the question, how likely are you to pop the bubble wrap inside your next delivery? And between Facebook and Twitter and kind of averaging it out, it came out pretty much even three ways. The 33% approximately said, I will definitely still be popping the bubble wrap. 33% approximately said, I may forget about the danger and pop it by mistake and then get nervous. And another 33-ish% said, no way I'm going near bubble wrap for the foreseeable future. How about you? Has it changed your outlook, Jada?
No, I think I'm still going to be popping some bubble wrap because it's just irresistible.
It is very irresistible. I mean, even Ryan, we saw him that the first thing he did when he got there was starting to pop some bubble wrap. And luckily, he was in the area where it was not affected and turned into bombs.
Yeah. Ooh, it would have been a different story.
Yeah. So thank goodness Ryan's okay. And some other folks that are okay are the great listeners, especially those that call and share their voice with us by either calling 304-837-2278 or sending in their pre-recorded message to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback.
Hey there, Wayne and Jada. Samuel Lewis here from Going Through Who. That's tscn.tv/gtw. Anyway, Kerblam. Good episode. I really liked this one. Intergalactic Amazon. That's pretty much the only way we can say it, right? And it wasn't subtle at all with it. But it was interesting. We were sitting here kind of, or at least I was anyway, sitting through the episode kind of wondering where the story was going to take the moral ground when it came to, you know, the whole Amazon thing. Because quite frankly, especially considering recently they just picked headquarters, it's a very timely episode as opposed to things that have happened recently in the news involving Amazon. So as a techie, I sort of found that interesting how it paralleled, even though this was recorded months back. So it's not like there's them trying to be pointed in the moment. It just happened to be that way. But inevitably, it ends up making me go back to one of the classic Doctor Who stories, because this was pretty much, I'm not going to say a remake, because a remake makes it sound like they weren't being original. They were. They just took a concept from classic Who and pushed it further, even giving that concept a name check in this episode. There is a phobia in Doctor Who lore known as robophobia. You heard the Doctor talk to her friends and go, "Don't you dare say that, that's robophobia." That wasn't just her coming up with some clever word for this episode. It is established back in the old Tom Baker episode. Had to do it. Had to say it that way. Just a little tribute. Anyway, that man has made it to where I will never say Tom Baker's name other than saying it that way. Anyway, so the old Tom Baker episode, Robots of Death, where, spoiler alert, someone ended up having robophobia in there and doing some very bad things. We then had the janitor ended up having robophobia, or at least this is how I'm analyzing it, that he had a major case of robophobia, and his thing of proving how the robots were wrong, a lot like the person in Robots of Death did, was to try to come up with some massive thing that would prove that these automated things were horrible and terrifying and horrific. And same basic principle, only bubble wrap, of course, because seriously, even watching this episode, I wanted to grab the bubble wrap until I found out it was bombs. Then I was like, okay, I would have the self-control not to mess with that bubble wrap. But yeah, even watching it, I wanted to pop some of that bubble wrap, and it wasn't until I figured out it was bomb laden that I then did not want to pop the bubble wrap. So if that gives you an idea of the psychological effects that bubble wrap clearly has on human beings, that'll give it to you. I loved all the characters. Lee Mack ended up showing up in this, the guy that played Dan Cooper. He happens to be of a comedic actor that I like. I know him mainly for a panel show called Would I Lie to You? Look it up sometime. It's very hilarious. If you happen to have BritBox, you have it on there, and I think it's cute. But I know him mainly for that panel show. So to see him show up in Doctor Who was a gleeful moment for me, which made it just as depressing when he ended up being the first casualty in the episode. It was like, no, it's actually worse whenever you love the actor that happens to be playing it and they become one of the Doctor Who casualties. So it's definitely one of those moments for me. But all in all, I loved this episode, honestly. It was smart about how it did things. Apparently, the entire world almost was created with CGI and visual effects, so almost none of that was practical. I found that interesting to find out. That was one of my little factoids I found online about this one. Thank you, TARDIS Wiki. And just all in all, the cast was fantastic. The two managers and their different ways of doing things, to where you would think one manager was in on it, possibly two, then it narrowed down to one, then it turned out neither one of them were involved, and it ended up being the janitor the whole time. You know, it was a nice set of variables to make this all a interesting whodunit. The doctor, when mentioning Hornet's Nest, name checks Unicorn and the Wasp by saying, oh, by the way, did I ever tell you about me and Agatha Christie? You know, it was, so again, for those that are going, oh, they're making this show a brand new show and they're not rebooting it and everything, and I hasten to add the ones that are saying that angrily. I know we had someone say it last week, but they weren't saying it angrily. I hasten to add, I mean it, this is the ones that are saying it angrily. It's clear that Doctor Who is still sticking with, no, all of this still existed, because even if, with lines like me and Agatha Christie, or mentions of robophobia, or trans mats, or things like that, like we had in last week's episode, definitely Doctor Who still has its history. It's just that they're making this season accessible, and for me, that is a fantastic thing. I have a person at work, never wanted to get into Doctor Who, and this season made them curious, and the fact that I could tell them, you're not going to have to know any Doctor Who stuff, just come into this season and join the family, fantastic for me. So I'm one of the ones that'll throw my hat in the ring and say, I love it. I absolutely love it. And you guys did ask me a question, so I am going to not take a lot of time, but I will take some time to do it. What my beloved sonic screwdriver is for me that I'm holding in my hot little hands? Well, what I use this thing for narratively in my life, as you jokingly called it, most of my sonic screwdrivers sit in my pencil cups in the background of my streams on Twitch whenever I game stream on there. But also, whenever someone follows my channel on Twitch, I give them what I call a sonic salute, which is just turning the sonic on, placing it to my head, and then giving them the salute gesture with the Sonic. So I give people a Sonic salute anytime they follow my channel because the notifications come up. So that's what I use my Sonic screwdriver for. You ask the question, ask a silly question, get a silly answer. So that's all I had to say. Very nice episode, and I hope they keep it up. So this is Samuel Lewis signing off. Next week ought to be interesting. Witch hunting with Alan Cumming. Yay. See you guys.
Wow. Thank you, Samuel. It's always great to hear from you. And no, actually, hearing from Samuel made me feel a little bit better about this episode.
I love it when listeners help persuade us a little more to the positive and maybe even point out a bunch of things that just we missed. Oh, well.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know that robophobia was a thing.
Ah, who knew? And Samuel, thank you so much for your great voice message and pointing out the Tom Baker Doctor Who story, Robots of Death, of course, Robots of Death. That type of activity, you know, killing robots, that could cause you to have robophobia. I mean, you know, I guess.
Sure.
And I'm so glad, Samuel, that you answered the question we were wondering about your own Sonic screwdrivers and how they can be seen in your Twitch videos in the background. And when you get a new person involved, a Sonic salute. That is good stuff.
I like it. I like it.
And wow, you, Samuel, you said you love the episode, even though you at the beginning wondered where the story's morality statement was going to be coming from. So that makes sense. And I thought Lee Mack looked familiar. I don't know if I've just seen him on a bunch of IMDb postings because I don't think I've watched Would I Lie to You on BritBox, but he was pretty funny. His timing and the actor that plays Graham both have some really good comedy timing, comedic timing, timing. And did you have any idea, Jada, that this entire episode practically was CGI created, even the outdoor scenes?
No, I didn't. They're getting really good at this stuff. That comes as a complete surprise to me.
And Samuel's already got new people watching Doctor Who because of this kind of soft reboot, Jodie Whittaker, Chris Chibnall new series. So thank you, Samuel, for bringing along coworkers to finally watch Doctor Who. Just let them know that during the off season, they just have about 55 years or so of back catalog to get caught up on. So they'll really know their stuff, but you're doing great work, Samuel. Great work. Yeah. Indeed. Let's check in and see what other listener feedback we've got to share with you.
Hello, Wayne and Jada. It's Jeff X-Force 11. I really liked aspects of this week's Doctor Who. I enjoyed the kind of little shout out to the Doctor's encounter with Agatha Christie and some other little shout outs here and there. But I really like the Friends, Team TARDIS. I love Graham just getting into everything and getting the information that's needed. I'm still not sold on just how easily the Doctor is getting flustered at some things. I know she's relatively new to this body, but it just seems like she should be a little more on top of things. But I'm enjoying this season. I'm really wondering what they're going to do next. All right, those are my thoughts. X-Force 11 out.
And they are excellent thoughts indeed. Jeff, thank you so much for recording those and sharing them with us. Jada, do you think the Doctor is too easily flustered?
I understand what he's saying. I don't think that. I like the idea that maybe the Doctor just seems to, I don't want to say think a little more about things, because that sounds so bad. And the Doctor's always thinking. We know that. The Doctor's the smartest person in the room. But it seems like this Doctor thinks on a more compassionate level. And I hate to say, this Doctor's a little more compassionate than the rest with the first female Doctor, because, you know, that's such a female thing, you know? Like, of course she's going to be more compassionate. But that's what it feels like. It feels like this Doctor is also concerned with how this affects other people, so she gets flustered a little easier because previous doctors would just do whatever. They knew that they were doing the right thing and they would deal with the consequences later. But oh, she seems to be, yeah, if she is more flustered than this, because she seems to be a little more in tune with everyone else around her, I think.
That's a nice way to look at it. I never noticed it all that much until I heard Jeff's message. And now, I don't know if I would say too easily flustered, but she is often flustered. We have seen it in just about every single episode except for maybe one. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And of course, you know, during the off season, is, or maybe even right now, as Chibnall and team are gathering feedback from everybody and writing and getting ready to do the next season of Doctor Who, they can kind of fine tune that, because yeah, Jeff, she has appeared flustered a lot. And another great Doctor Who shout out in this episode, back to the old Doctor Who with Agatha Christie, which I'm not positive if I've seen that episode, but I love Agatha Christie's stories, so I need to dig into that and make sure that's on my list.
Yeah, that's a Tenth and Donna story, The Unicorn and the Wasp.
I must have seen it then, because I've seen everything from the Christopher Eccleston series onward, as well as the TV movie and a fair amount of the classic episodes, but I admit I need to watch a lot more. So that was not even all that old. David Tennant, I guess I've seen it, and well, I know where to find it, and I'll watch it again.
Yeah, it'd be like watching it all over. It'll be great.
Yes.
But you know, Wayne, we also got some brilliant feedback from our friends at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. One of them being Aaron, and Aaron says, "It reminds me of when you were younger, and by that, I mean last month." I love Graham. I also enjoyed Doctor looking to Yaz to gush about the crush. No Kira. It was great to see Yaz using her police skills to take down the bad guy for a bit. It would be nice to see that again, as I enjoy the companions helping with their fields, such as Ryan knowing how to operate within the factory, Graham with his bus knowledge, and again, Yaz with her police skills. Yes, the show is called Doctor Who, but the Doctor doesn't have to do everything each week, or be the only hero. Again, while screen focus can be a bit of an issue with so many characters, I do think as a whole, this group has been used incredibly well. It's just another reason, as a whole, this might be my favorite season of the show so far. I really love the use of logic by the characters this week, and why they could or could not do certain things. 9 Amazon Warehouse on the Moons out of 10. Wow, 9 out of 10, Aaron. I think she really liked this.
I believe you're correct, Jada. Aaron, excellent points. You've made so many great points in there. And it is great to see all of the best friends getting to use their expertise, especially with Yaz and her police training. You know, she's fairly new to the force. She hasn't been a lifer just yet. But once you get all that training, it's something that comes innate to you and you're able to just jump right in and use it without even thinking. So I do look forward to seeing Yaz and some of her police skills again in the future. And yeah, there was a lot of good, funny moments in here, and Ryan knowing all about the factory and how it probably works, even though it's on another planet and maybe way in the future, hard to tell, but 9 out of 10, Aaron, we love getting your feedback. Please keep it coming. We also see your comments that you leave on the blog posts after we put the episode live, and those are great to read as well. So thank you so much for sharing those and being such a part of the Don't Blink family. We also got some mind-blowing feedback as well in the Don't Blink Facebook group. Fred Firestein says, "My thoughts after Charlie met Kira. Oh, please don't let one of them die. Then we found out Charlie was responsible, and Kira became a victim of his plan. Then Charlie died. So much for that. As for the computer-related stuff, which is always a pet peeve of mine, yeah, they went all over the place. Ask the old drone to check out the system and see what's changed. Use verbal commands to override everything. The system is both complicit and aware enough to defend itself. Okay, let's not overthink it, I guess. I also thought this could be Wall-E Part 2, in which we learn the danger of Amazon when taken to its extreme. Also wondering if this is another example of the villain in the episode saying the end justifies the means, but not being considered evil. Chibnall seems to be avoiding villains who are just evil for their own selfish purposes, other than racists and religious zealots. But remember that anything you see this season was done before the season started airing. Unless they go back in time. Well put, Fred. Thank you so very much. And yeah, I know that Amazon is huge and, you know, anything could happen to other companies like it in the future or on different planets, but although I don't have a whole bunch of Echo Dots around the house, I love Amazon. I love my Amazon Prime. And like some of the characters in this episode, I love getting my packages and opening them up. Whether or not I have time to pop the bubble wrap, I love getting packages. In fact, I'm waiting for one to be delivered Friday afternoon, the day after Thanksgiving, the remastered CD box set of Kate Bush's first, I think, 6 albums. And I can't wait. I'm going to look forward to that box and open it. And instead of popping the bubble wrap, I'll just pop the CD into my deck, put on my headphones, and crank it up. But I digress. I digress. Who else we got in the Facebook group, Jada?
We also have Neil Odenstein. Interesting episode. I don't know why the doctor had all the delivery men explode the bubble wrap. There had to be a better way of getting rid of it than just exploding it all right there. There must be more explosive wrap that needs to be taken care of. For that matter, she basically murdered the guy. Judge, jury, and executioner all in one there. She doesn't use a gun, but explosive bubble wrap? No problem. But Fred pointed out that this was another example of the doctor allowing the villain to choose their fate, though. She didn't want the delivery to launch, and he stood in the middle of it all. Fair point.
That could definitely be a moral quandary. What's the best way to clear this up without too many deaths? Great points, Fred and Neil as well. Also, Ray Mays commented that the writers wanted to show that the doctor has the ability to mentally and verbally interact with technology and turn that interaction into a positive outcome for humanity. We saw how she could manipulate a human earlier in the episode. When Charlie's remote device is crushed, the doctor uses her mental ability to outthink the technology and her verbal skills to stop the delivery. Charlie gets to make his own decision, and the human management will increase the human workforce. Humanity wins all around. Not the best episode. It's a simple plot, but a little hard to follow until the end. So we're not alone in that. Respect Data and Ray.
Good.
And Trevor Hedden pointed out two interesting things in this episode that we should probably go watch the episode at least one more time and look for this, because Trevor pointed out that Graham has two lines of extreme interest. Around the 18 minute and 30 second mark, he says, "I'm 310. And then to the doctor at about the 20 minute and 14 second mark, Graham says, "Reminds me of when you were younger." And then in the TARDIS at the beginning, note that Doctor number 13, after the dialogue, "Kerblam, here we come." That's not Matt Smith's doctor being referenced. What do you make of those, Jada? What do you make of those?
The 310 reference? I did catch that when I watched it, and I thought it might have been Graham just saying something off the cuff, you know, whatever, just joking around, joshing. I didn't take him seriously. Now, that it would be interesting if they made more of it. I would love that to be something. I could see, you know, several ways that could go, and it could be fun. But I really did just take it as him just joking around, because he knew he was out in the universe, and the possibility is he could be of a species that could be 310 as far as anybody knew. But it reminds me of when you were younger. I don't remember that. I thought that was him talking to, I thought Graham was talking to... Who's he talking to when he said that?
I'm not positive. On the surface, it sounds like something he would say to Ryan, but knowing that the doctor has let a few things out about, you know, how long she's been around, it could have been addressed to her. And Trevor, if we're totally missing these, we apologize. We need more reference. Let us know, because it sounds to me, based on this post, that you are really onto something. Again, let us in. Let us in on what's happening, because those are intriguing lines. And if they are further shout outs to whether Matt Smith, David Tennant, or classic Doctor Who, Capaldi, Eccleston, let us know. Good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff. And, you know, although Neil Vestal isn't enjoying the season thus far, Trevor Hedden replied that he loved last season, loving this season. The show took another seismic change, like 2 to 3 or 5 to 6. In my opinion, the first worked, 2 to 3. The second didn't, 5 to 6. Seismic Doctor Who change is always going to polarize people, and 12 and 13 was another one.
Good points, Trevor, especially to those who have either already written off this season, or we've had a couple people that after they watched the season premiere, which was fantastic, they're like, I'm out. I'll be back after the next regeneration. So, yeah, the seismic changes you mentioned, Trevor, you're right. They're always going to polarize people. And this was definitely a polarizing change, especially with new showrunner, new doctor, new music. But I have not heard hardly anything negative about the music. Universally, I think people are really liking it, except for in that one episode where I mentioned that one thing went on way too long. But yeah, polarizing indeed. And in the end, we'll see what happens. I can't believe there's only 3 episodes this season and the New Year's Day episode.
Yeah, it's gone by so fast.
Unbelievable. You know how time is. And with that, keep the Doctor Who conversations going in our Don't Blink Facebook group. Some of the other excellent conversations happening right now that you can go there and read up on are rumors that we might get the next season/series of Doctor Who in late 2019 instead of 2020 after all.
And also, Fred Firestein posted a review about the Big Finish audio drama featuring the Sixth Doctor story called Doctor Who and the Pirates.
There's great comments also by you Don't Blinkers about Fred's Big Finish post, as well as for other posts in the group.
Fred also passes along some information about a possible classic Doctor Who Blu-ray collection coming to us in the future. And there's even more, so make sure you go over there and check us out. You can also follow us on Twitter at Doctor Who GSM. You can follow me at Story's Voice. And you can follow Wayne at Wayne Henderson. Remember to subscribe to Don't Blink in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. Also, check out all the links and the things to be discussed in the show notes at don'tblinkpodcast.com.
And thank you so much for joining us here on the Don't Blink podcast. Until next week, while we celebrate Thanksgiving here in the U.S. and maybe do a bit of online shopping at Amazon, we'll be extra thankful if you'd share the love of the Don't Blink podcast with your friends and family. Thank you so very much. Thank you. And remember to pick it, click it, and kerblam it. But don't blink.
Don't even blink.
Thank you for listening to Don't Blink, a Doctor Who fan podcast, part of the Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network of shows. I'm the Doctor in Utah, and the majestic tale of a madman in a box are used with permission from Silver Screen Records. They are composed by Murray Gold and performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Ben Foster. Taken from the original Doctor Who soundtrack, Doctor Who Series 6, available on Silver Screen Records.